back to Sports Time on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour brought to you by Landers Ford and Collierville. Here once again are Brett Norsworthy and Bryant Dacus.
Welcome back into Sports Time. Bryant and Brett with you, and we've got to talk the NBA, and we do it at this time every single Thursday afternoon with Keith Smith.
Time to talk NBA with Keith Smith from Spot Rack and the Front Office Show, and on Twitter X at Keith Smith NBA. Here's Keith Smith talking basketball with Bryant and Brett.
Keith Smith joins us now from SpotTrack and the Front Office Show. And Keith, I know a lot to talk about, but we were very excited here in Memphis Sunday afternoon when the NBA draft lottery was complete, the Grizzlies making the jump to number 3. What did you make of what you saw in the draft lottery and the Grizzlies moving up in the draft, and we'll have selection number 3?
Yeah, absolutely huge for the Grizzlies. They would have been fine anyway. They were going to get a really good player, but now they're in position to get a franchise guy. I know there you can find a handful of mock drafts that show AJ Devonta or Darren Peterson drop into 3. I don't think that's overly likely. I think in talking to everybody I talked to over the last few days, it feels like those guys are pretty much locked to go 1 or 2. But that leaves Cam Boozer, fantastic player. Or if he plays and performs well enough, Caleb Wilson, who is also, a really good prospect. I think Boozer makes a lot of sense for the Grizzlies and what they're building. I think he would come in and just be another good player. He can do a lot of different things. And I think he has the highest floor of any of the prospects in this group. Ceiling maybe isn't quite as high, but ceiling still pretty dang high. So, yeah, I think this is absolutely huge for the franchise moving forward.
Keith, if it comes down to those two picks, one from Duke, one from North Carolina, there's no way Zach Kleiman's just going to tip the scales to Boozer and Duke because he's a Dukie, is it?
I would hope not. If it is, then they better be getting in somebody else to make the decision there. If you're, that's one thing. If you're down to, when it's, the Major League Baseball draft used to be, 30 some odd rounds long, and you were doing things like drafting the first base coach's nephew's cousin.
Drafting Lon Kruger. Like,
okay, sure. Yeah, right? Like whatever, have fun, but. And, with the third pick in the draft, that better not even be a consideration, really, beyond the fact that, they both went to blue blood programs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, two great players. And, Keith, we'll get back more into the draft and things around the NBA. But far as excited as we were on Sunday for the draft, we were almost overwhelmingly, decidedly more crushed by the news of Brandon Clark and how it hit. And you, with your Celtic background, you've had to go through that twice. Celtics had to go through it with Lenny Bias the day after the draft in '86, and then with Reggie Lewis. It's a bolt of lightning, isn't it, when the news breaks?
It's the worst possible thing you can see. And I had seen some people who are, I'm not calling them out as being, doing anything wrong, but people who they're just not trusted news sources tweeting about something earlier in the day. And then, when the more quote unquote official reporting came out, it was just absolutely stunning. I mean, just, take everything out. It's a young man at 29 years old is gone. That's far too young. To be gone. And, that is just, that part alone is crushing. And my first thoughts whenever someone passes go to those who are left, the loved ones, the family, the friends, the people who were, a big part of Brandon Clark's life that are now left picking up the pieces where, here one day, gone the next. And it's just, further reminder of, give your loved ones a hug when you have a chance, pick up the phone and call when if you're debating, should I call now? I only have a couple minutes. Call, because you never know, right? And you're never going to feel bad about it on the backside. And that's advice I need to take myself sometimes. But absolutely, crushing. And I I thought of y'all. You know, we've been talking every week for years and years now. You know, about these guys, and just, you know, when you lose them, it feel, you know, even if they're not a member of your family, it does a little bit feel like you lost a member of your own family.
Thank you, Keith. That is really kind. And Keith, there's a couple of 30 for 30s that whatever time of night or the weekend, if I'm running through the ESPNs and I see it on, I can't help but stop. One's the story of Fi Slamma Jamma. Really, it's kind of the story of NC State and Fi Slamma Jamma in 83. But the other one, I always stop and watch again on Lynn Bias. And what always hits me is his mom and dad. That, I mean, it was Ozzie and Harriet. I mean, it was great background, great upbringing, loving family, and just one terrible night does it to them.
Yeah, I was just a little guy when that happened, and I was absolutely falling in love with basketball and falling in love with the Celtics. And the guy I hated already was Michael Jordan, because Michael Jordan made the Celtics look bad a lot of times in his first few years in the league. And I very much remember thinking, you know, I clearly didn't know, you know, the game and in the draft and all that the way I did. But I remember being like, wait, the Celtics got the Michael Jordan guy, the guy who can run and jump and dunk. And, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong, I grew to very much appreciate the way Larry Bird and Kevin McHale played, you know, but I was excited to have, you know, the fun, exciting guy. And then it's clear as if it happened this morning. I remember waking up the next morning and running in, and my thing was I would grab the newspapers. And my dad happened to be home. My dad traveled a lot for a living. He was usually home about you know, 5-6 days a month. And he was home, and I was going to grab the papers, and he, like, put his hand on the top of the paper and said, "Hey, buddy," and then told me. And then several years later, the flashbacks to my mom picking us up from a summer league basketball game, and we flipped the radio over from whatever, you know, for her, it was her music, but oldies music she was listening to the sports radio to catch, you know, the thing, and hearing, you know, Reggie Lewis, you know, passed out. And that was the second time that it happened. And before we were even home, the radio broke in with Reggie Lewis has died. And it was, wow. I mean, though I remember everything about those two moments. Just like I said, just like if it happened today.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's just as awful to even think about. But obviously here the news came down early in the day, probably around lunchtime or so, Brandon Clark's passing. And then we learned later in the evening of the passing of Jason Collins, another guy that, you know, played a big role in the league as a player, but what he meant to a lot of people outside of just basketball. So, I mean, on the same day, losing two NBAers, that was really tough.
Yeah, I mean, nobody put it better than the NBPA, the Players Association, about, you know, how hard it was to, you know, lose two members of the family in the same day. And, you know, that it really is a brotherhood, you know, and these guys, you know, spend so much time, you know, rooting for each other and, you know, really trying to be in a place where, you know, just, you know, like, let's all lift each other up. You know, I know people will say about basketball, like, man, I liked when these guys weren't all friends and that. But I think what they've all collectively learned is there's an awful lot of money to be made here, and let's not be stupid. Let's not anybody go out and lose money. We can still compete really hard. That doesn't mean we need to wreck each other's lives. And they do everything they can to lift each other up. And, you know, Jason Collins was such a, you know, if you ever got a chance to talk to him, because he coached in the league when he was done playing for a little bit. Just such a, you know, smart, special basketball mind. But, you know, when he came out, it was like, okay, you know, and it really was, I know, seen by a lot of people as like, this was open doors. And I think, you know, there are some who thought that might open doors for more people to do it. We haven't necessarily seen that. But as Charles Barkley said, I can't remember if it was yesterday or the day before when he said it, but he said some version of, what do you think, there aren't other gay professional athletes, like, you're crazy. And he goes, and here's the thing, let's get it normalized so that nobody has to care. And it doesn't have to be a thing. And it's, you know, just a lot that he did. And I mean, and I know the end of his life was, you know, not great. It was painful for him and his loved ones as well. But you know, let's hope for him he's in a better place and, you know, free of pain and all that now.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Talking to Keith Smith, he joins us every single Thursday to talk the NBA. I know we're talking about the lottery, and you mentioned a couple of those guys. Break it down for us, because it does seem like everybody, the talk is Caleb Wilson or Cam Boozer. Break down those two players, their fits, and who you think ultimately, if it just comes down to those two, obviously things can change, but if a team, the Grizzlies, are deciding between those two players, break those two down and who you would choose.
Yeah, and Cam Boozer is a really, really good all-around player. He is, he's the size of a four, and he's probably going to be a four. Oh, but I think there's, if you craft lineups where he needs to be a three, I think he'll be perfectly comfortable being a three. Can handle the ball well for a player of his size. He can see the floor well. Nothing really seems to rattle him either. When games for Duke got sideways this year, he was always the guy on the court kind of pulling everybody together, which for a freshman is pretty impressive stuff. Then we would see him regularly in the NCAA tournament, especially when it was his brother that committed the turnover that kind of lost them the game. He never lost his head. He just got everybody together and was like, all right, hey, let's, you know, what do we got to do? How do we make it work? And, you know, that part is going to go a long way with people. But, you know, then you talk about his basketball skills. He's a dribble fast shoot guy. He's a pretty good, solid defender. He's not probably ever going to make an all defensive team, but he can handle the ball. He can really move it. I like the way he shoots off the dribble. I think his jump shot's going to be really solid. So, just a really good player. And then Caleb Wilson is the kind of guy that you look at him, and I think there's a lot of Evan Mobley in his game, where I think there's a lot of, you know, long, lanky athleticism there, plays up around the rim a lot. I think you see him do a lot of things defensively, where he moves the street real well for a big guy. He's a four, probably could play some five in some smaller lineups. It, you know, for the Grizzlies, you're kind of, you know, you're in a pretty good spot there, right? You're picking from one of two guys, and I don't think you can go wrong with either one. And if something gets weird at the top of the draft, boy, whoever slips into the third pick, you're really going to luck out with that guy, because I think Devonta and Peterson are going to be absolute monsters in this league.
What kind of deal, what all would it take? Would it include Ja? Would it include Ty Jerome? Would it include G.G. Jackson? It would probably include either that 16 pick or the second round pick. What all would it take for the Grizzlies to package something together and get in there where they can get one of these point guards also in the first round?
Oh, like come back up? Is that what you're saying? Like come back up in the draft with that second pick?
Yes, to keep the three and take Boozer, but also land one of these premier point guards.
That's tough, because now you're talking, you got to get back into probably the top nine or so there, maybe even the top eight, because I think what you're going to see is after the top four, after Devonta and Peterson and Boozer and Wilson, that's the order I you know, think they're going to go, it's going to be a run on guards. It's going to be Acuff and Flemings and Mikel Brown and somebody I'm forgetting off the top of my head. Keaton Wagler. Mm-hmm. Those guys are probably, they may all go in a row. The next guy that's probably a threat to break up the guard group is either Braden Burries, who's much more of a true two guard, or Nate Amendt, who's a 3-4 himself. Probably more of a four, because he actually measured even taller and longer than he was expected to. So I think that's, you're talking a lot. Now, for those teams, Ja Morant, maybe. So you're talking Ja Morant. You're going to have to give up the other pick as well if you're Memphis. It's 16, right?
That's right.
That they have is the other one. Yeah, you're going to have to give up 16. You know, I did challenges with a lot of their other younger guys. I don't know that they have a lot of you know, trade value in that the Grizzlies would want to trade out of them. I think the other challenge is, I think the Grizzlies are in a space of, you want to be a little bit careful. You don't want to trade too much future draft capital and like that. But I like the way you're thinking, because, you know, if we come away from that draft with Memphis having drafted one of the guards and either Boozer or Wilson, Guys, get the guest room ready because I might be coming up and staying quite a bit.
Come on. Guest room, presidential suite at the Peabody for you.
Yeah, we'll definitely figure something out. Switching gears a little bit to the playoffs right now. We saw that game last night with Cleveland getting the road win, the first road win of that series. What have you made of this series so far and now with Cleveland in the driver's seat?
Yeah, I think Detroit is going to rue missed opportunities here. I think both the last two games, they looked like they had chances to get those games won, especially last night. I know the Asar Thompson play happened, and it should have been a foul. We all know, but let's not let the Pistons off the hook. They had plenty to do with their own demise down the stretch, and it's every time it goes bad for the Pistons, it goes bad because teams get the ball out of Cade Cunningham's hands early. They don't let him get it back, nor they force it. By the time Cunningham gets it back, he's being thrown a grenade and has to just throw something at the rim. It's been tough for them, and I think – not having Duncan Robinson really hurt them because just his presence, he has to be guarded. And you have to chase him through screens. You have to, you know, find and identify him in transition, which all of those things, that leaves gaps for other stuff, whether that's Cade Cunningham or Tobias Harris. And then I don't want to take anything away from the Cavs. James Harden finished game four really strong, played a really great game five. Now the question is, did James Harden do it in a closeout game? This is historically where we haven't seen James Harden play very well. So there's a lot of pressure on him to play better and get it done here in the next little bit.
It feels like we're on our way to New York City versus Oklahoma City.
Yeah, I think so. Which is everybody's going to have a whole lot of fun with, the biggest city in the world then the backwater that is Oklahoma City, which it's funny because you talk to some people over in Europe, and they're like, that'd be a pretty big city over here, all things considered. But it just is the way it is. But, yeah, the Thunder they got to be loving life. Two sweeps, sitting home with their feet up, Jalen Williams' hamstring getting healthy, and they're going to – they're rooting for the Timberwolves to beat the Spurs, and let's stretch that out to seven and keep beating up on Wemby and the rest of the guys. And, we'll just sit over here, and the Knicks got to be loving this. Sure, they haven't been the biggest fans of the Pistons a lot of times, but I bet they're pretty big Pistons fans right now, rooting for them in game six to stretch that out, and that gets OG Anunoby a couple more days of rest. Like they got to be feeling real good about the direction, all this is going.
Yeah, no, they definitely got to be.
Fun fact about Oklahoma City, and I first learned this in the 80s. I drove over there to go to an LSAT prep class all weekend, the largest square mile city in the country.
I believe it.
Interesting.
It covers a lot of land.
Wow.
And I mean, it was something to drive in.
I'll tell you, it's funny. As a kid who grew up in Boston and then going all over New England is nothing but small town, small town, small town, slightly bigger, bigger town that's really a city. Then small towns, and then you run into a big city. I moved down here to Florida, and it's like Orlando stretches all the way basically to Lakeland, which then stretches all the way to Tampa.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm like, I've been driving for an hour. How am I still in Orlando? It's just the way it works down here. Everything down here, it's all county-based. Here, everything's more about the county, where back home, everything was a little small town.
We had Bryant. You'll love this. You can hear him saying it. John Calipari, after his first two or three years here at Memphis, he took a team during the summer to China, and real kind of excitingly, he said, "Heck!" And the town I'm using as example in our area is 60,000 people. He said, "Heck, over here, 3 million people is Jonesboro."
Duh.
I mean, he said, "Everywhere you go, it's 3 and 4 million people."
Yeah, it's crazy.
That is wild. That is wild. The other series that is going on right now, the Spurs and the Timberwolves, what have you made of that one? Obviously, the big story, Victor Wembanyama being ejected and then the very next day coming out and really taking over. What have you made of that series?
Yeah, the ejection was absolutely spot on. I think it was absolutely spot on to not suspend him, too. I know some people took issue with that, but I felt like he has no history of this, right? And And I think there was intent behind what he did when he elbowed Naz Reid up in the, you know, head neck area. But this is not, because we were like, well, if Draymond Green did it, he would have got suspended. Hmm. Yeah, no kidding, because it would have been about the 20th time he's done something like that. Like, it, you know, then what does the NBA always say? Like, prior history factors in the fines and suspensions. So, mm-hmm. So I think, you know, for them, you know, it's, yeah, you've seen they, you know, when Wemby gets it going, teams struggle, right? I mean, he's just so good. He's a one-of-one talent that we've never really seen like this in the league. And I think, you know, they're showing, like, the best way teams are going to try to defend him. And I think this is a good sense. So you better get ready for the next 15, 20 years of this, however long his career is going to go, because teams are just going to say, we got nothing else, but let's be extremely physical with him. And we'll start being extremely physical with him 45 feet from the basket. And just, you know, if we hit him enough, maybe he won't come down in here anymore. Maybe he won't want to do this. But the thing I like is, in this series especially, we've seen a lot of times, takes those couple of dribbles, backs this guy into that, you know, about 10, 12, 13 foot turnaround. You got nothing. Good luck. Mm-hmm. Your best hope is box him out and hope he misses. Because mm-hmm. there's you can't block it. There's only a couple guys in the league that didn't even have a chance of bothering the shot. And it is, I mean, he is something else. It is really there. And that all that said, wouldn't surprise me if Minnesota comes out at home, you know, plays great and forces a game seven. They just seem to be a different team at home. And we've seen Anthony Edwards do a lot of special stuff over the years.
So Keith, when do you think Wembanyama is better? Do you think he's in kind of posting up with how you just described, or is he better in transition?
I think he's better when it's a good mix of stuff. I don't like when he gets too into taking his jump shot, because when it's a lot of jumpers for him, it does feel a little bit like, especially, I mean, if they're going in, it's one thing, obviously. No one's going to say too much. But I feel like there are times when it's like, hey, all right, they're not falling. Get your butt on the block, or get your butt 7 feet from the block, which is basically anybody else being on the block. I mean, can't tell you how many times I've seen him go to shoot a turnaround from where anybody else is and realize, like, oh, I'm a half, you know, pivot in from a layup. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it's just kind of let me toss it in off the glass. It's, yeah, so I really feel like, you know, he is something else where it is, you know, get a good mix there. And I think that's where everybody says, like, they need De'Aaron Fox. Like Castle's so good, and Harper is awesome. And my whole thing is, like, yeah, they need De'Aaron Fox. Because if you watch, when things start to get a little wonky, usually either De'Aaron Fox or Harrison Barnes, who kind of brings the guys together and says, hey, everybody breathe for a second. Mm-hmm. Here's what we're going to do. And De'Aaron Fox is the one who's like, you know what, guys? Yeah, it's got a little sideways on us. Let's get the big guy a touch down in the paint, third near it, and, you know, make sure he gets a scoring spot. So that's why I think, you know, he still has so much value to that team.
Yeah, it's a really good point. Having those vets is very important, especially in playoff time. But, Keith, as always, thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy the weekend, and we'll talk to you again next week. By the time we talk to you next, we'll be talking about conference finals.
Yeah, we'll be deep in the conference finals, and I'll be looking for opinions. I know you guys are going to be having the Boozer Wilson debate.
Oh, yeah.
Probably for, you got about 5 weeks worth of that coming. So yes, I'm looking forward to breaking that down.
We got exactly great choices, and Keith, I've taken a vow that I promise, no matter what happens, I'm not going to go back with revisionist history or looking back 2020. One may really burn the other one and, you know, go on to a Hall of Fame career, and Memphis may be the recipient of the Hall of Famer and somebody else gets burned, but I'm not going to do the front office like that because I think they've got great choices.
Yeah, I don't think they can go wrong. I mean, clearly one guy will end up better than the other, but with everything we know right now, unless something else comes out that we don't know, they're in great position. But I'm looking forward to talking about all that with you guys over the coming weeks leading up to the draft.
Yeah, going to be a lot of fun, Keith. We'll do it again next Thursday.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Keith. Keith Smith joining us like he always does to talk the NBA, and just so much going on right now. Playoffs still rolling, but now a lot of people turning their attention to the NBA draft. Start getting a lot more off-season news and different things, trades and that such in the next couple of weeks as all of these teams get done with the season.
Brian, I swear, I'm keeping that vow. It could be injury. It could be just it could be inferior play to who you could have taken, whether it's one spot behind you or two or three behind you. And a lot of people will go through those past drafts, and it, you know, it was easy to do it over Hashim to beat.
Sure.
It was easy.
Sure.
As best I have always learned, that if it hadn't have been Hashim the beat from the owner, when the billionaire owner says, you're taking so-and-so, guess what you do?
You're taking that person.
You take that person.
Yep.
And, you know, through the years, you know, could have been James Harden, and you could look at a lot of them. I from what I was told, I think it would have been Tyreek.
Wow, that would have been fun. But, yeah, I mean, you know, it's one of those things where – we only know the information that's in front of us. And, you know, obviously things are going to happen over these guys. Hopefully all of these guys have 15-year careers in the NBA, and things will happen. But, you know, based on what we know today, I think really, really good prospects. Now, the one thing that I have not enjoyed so far, and we've only been doing this for, what, 4 or 5 days now of all the talk of who – I'm already tired of the checking the injury reports on all of these guys. I mean, again, Zach Edey, when he was drafted, the number one thing everyone told me was he did not have a single injury at Purdue. And he's all but had every injury, it seems like, since getting drafted by the Grizzlies. So
at Purdue, I talked about, you know, never a knee pad on, didn't have the bad big man knees were, you know, immediately iced down when he came out, and now we've had all this.
So, I mean, you really can't predict any of that stuff. And so, you know, just take the guy that you like. Take the, you know, you'll be a fan of wanting the team to take the guy you like. And, you know, hopefully it'll work out. I think great options ahead of him.
Wouldn't it be great if the player the Grizzlies take and the one right behind that they don't take, they go on to Ovechkin, Crosby years.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be great. You know, couldn't go wrong with either of them.
Right.
You know, that'd be awesome. But we'll see what
happens.
He's
went to hockey, didn't he?
I love it. And hockey news out there, Brett, that we might touch on later. So.
We do have hockey news. You had a closeout. No, you and Landon both had a win last night in Colorado.
That.
Now, after 10 picks, Landon's 5-5. I'm 5-5. Brian, you're 8-2. You almost have us dormant.
What can I say? I'm a hockey guy.
But you're a hockey guy.
You got sweaters and logos
and hats and bats and T-shirts.
I don't know about any bats in hockey. But,
sticks.
Yes. I'm supposed to be winning the hockey picks. If I don't win the hockey picks, then we got a problem. Yeah, then
you're
8-2,
really, and you have Vegas, and Landon has Vegas. You're getting ready to close out there. And then group lock on my Sabres.
Yeah, we'll see how all that
who
plays
would pick
up.
Minnesota?
No, that's a great question.
What a knave.
Honestly, who would even root for Minnesota? I mean,
nobody.
Is really, really the question.
Nobody south of Bloomington.
No, not at all. But, yeah, we got both hockey games later tonight on TNT. But let's go ahead and get to another break when we return, talking some Major League Baseball.
Not only can you listen to your favorite shows on Sports 56, you can also watch video of the shows live on Twitter and YouTube. Watch and listen every day at Sports 56 WHBQ. Now back to Sports Time on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour brought to you by Landers Ford in Collierville. Here once again are Brett Norsworthy and Bryant Dacus.
Welcome back into Sports Time. Bryant and Brett with you. We got to talk some Major League Baseball, as a lot of games already today, a Thursday travel day. That means a lot of day ball. And right now, Cardinals in action. They're down 1 against the Athletics. 4-3 the score as they're going to the top of the 9th inning. That's the only game that is in progress right now. Handful of finals earlier. Pirates get a win over the Rockies. The Reds, I mean, just put a thumping on the Nationals. 15-1 the final score.
Are you in a 15-run pool? Have the Reds?
You know what? I'm not in a 15-run pool. I'm not in any pool. Certainly not a 15-run pool. The Mets, they get a win over Detroit. The Twins, a 9-1 win over the Marlins. The Brewers, a big win over the Padres. And the Mariners, an 8-3 win over the Astros. So still a handful of games left to be played. 4 games later tonight, including the Chicago White Sox, who won again last night, improving to .500 on the season. How about that?
Guarantee you they'll take it
and
have to be surprised. Connor may not be, but
no,
21 up, 21 down.
He is very surprised.
After 42, and I don't really start looking at the playoffs. until the morning of Memorial Day. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the quarter poll, the summertime holidays, yep. Memorial Day, 4th of July, Labor Day, and then, you know, at the end of the season, that's when it really matters.
Yeah.
But at through 42, the Southsiders have to be pleased.
Oh, they definitely got to be.
And the Cardinals are pleased.
Certainly. And, you know, especially with the White Sox, certainly with the Cardinals as well, you know, you're seeing a lot of young guys in the lineup, in the rotation. And so seeing a lot of these young guys that are stepping up and showing, hey, I can hang at this level. Obviously, you know, going out there and getting a big-time international free agent like they did, who has become a sensation around the game, you know, that has certainly helped. I think there's a lot of fun being had right now on the south side.
How did they pull that off?
That's a great question. I really don't know the ins and outs of it, but they got it done, and you know, who knows how long he'll stay around. You know, there's even some people saying that the White Sox should capitalize on this and trade him right now. I don't agree with that, but you know, I think he's on a 2-year deal, so you know, we'll see how long it lasts.
That all?
Yeah, but it's a very short deal, and I think that's
a big reason why.
They got it done. But, you
now,
know, we'll
Jerry
see what
Reinsdorf
like.
Still owns the White Sox, doesn't he?
I believe so, yeah.
Well, you know what his hobby is.
What's that?
He likes to sit at home at night and shine pennies.
Yes,
he's so tired.
That is exactly right. No, he loves doing that. There's
I think they ought to be dealing.
Yeah, well, it's a popular opinion out there, and a lot of people hopping on that of, hey, go get some value for him right now.
I think the story through about 40, 42, 43 games around baseball, very few teams should be that displeased mm-hmm. of where they are. Okay, maybe Boston, mm-hmm. And already having to fire a manager. Mm-hmm. That's not good. Toronto 500, no, because they have shown a way through the years to have that push. You know, the Yankees sure aren't. Baltimore, I'm not going to go through every team, mm-hmm. but the Astros would be one. The Mets would be one. Mm-hmm. That's about it.
That's about it.
I think when you went reported to spring training after 43 games, Vitello, in your first year, you're 18-25. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't have a single distinguishing star.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, very few teams, like you said, that I think should be too unhappy about the way the season's playing out. I mean, you even look at a team like Detroit, 19-25 right now, but you look at all those injuries, and you know they're only 4.5 games back in their division, 2.5
Great
games
manager.
Out of the wild card. So, you know, when yep. you look at a long season ahead of you, you can't feel bad about that, even though you're dead last in your division. So, yeah, I think a lot of good around Major League Baseball right now.
Detroit will have a push.
Oh, it absolutely will. I mean, you know, when you don't have one of the best pitchers in Major League Baseball and a couple other guys, I mean, they have a ton of injuries on that team right now, kind of the same way of the Astros with all of these injuries that they have. I don't think either of those teams are out of it. And, you know, if they can get healthy and this doesn't become a full season of injuries, then, yeah, I think both those teams will be right there.
And after game 162 and it's all over and you're not in the playoffs, a lot of people could look back and go, well, what wasn't that a cute little Cardinal mm-hmm. Start they had, you know, starting 24-18?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, they could. And I think
that could seem like a million years ago.
Sure, and I think it's probably more likely that will happen than the alternative. But, you know, it's seeing, you know, these glimpses of improvement and seeing this team get better. You know, we just mentioned the White Sox. The last couple of seasons that they've had where it's been just really, really pitiful. Same thing kind of with the Cardinals. A little different. But, you know, it has been down years to see the improvements, to see some of the young guys step up and at least show that they can hang at the major league level. You know, that is a sign of improvement and I think a sign to be excited about the future at both those places. And there are other places around that I think are having that same sort of excitement. And, you know, we might not win a lot this season, but, you know, we're moving in the right direction as a franchise.
I know I saw out there on Cardinal Twitter, I wonder if you saw this, that to this point in games managed, even years, that Ollie Marmol has a better managerial record than Tony La Russa.
Is that right? Interesting.
And La Russa had that big first year in 96, mm-hmm. getting to the NLCS and blowing a 3-1 lead mm-hmm. to the Braves. Boy, I really jinxed that one, Brian. You know, back in the 90s when we were doing this together, right?
Yes, that's right.
Oh, I really blew it up
3-1.
I said, you know, World Series against the Yankees.
Oh, man.
Can't wait for it to start.
Oh,
man. Didn't scratch again.
Oh, that is brutal. Oh, that's really bad. Well, that happens. That happens. You can't get ahead of yourself, you know?
Guess where I was in the 90s.
You're right here.
Right here.
Right here. And, wow, blew it. But, yeah, I don't think you have to worry about that this year. I think
Todd Stottlemyre's start really blew it more than I did. But
yes.
I'll take the hit.
There you go.
But then 96 really good for Don Tony La Russa, the great Tony La Russa, my favorite manager of all time. 97, 98, 99 were pretty ugly.
Yeah.
Now, if it hadn't been for the home run race, there wasn't a lot of reason to go.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah.
Then 2000 kicked off the greatest stretch in Cardinals history.
That's interesting. Yeah, I didn't see that earlier today, but that's a little hard to believe. But I think maybe a sign for, you know. And
I think if you give him anything, he's pretty good.
Yeah, no, I think so too. And obviously, you know, a lot of people.
Shockingly, you give him a lot. Everybody would be pretty good.
Yeah, and so no, I think he's gotten better. I think he's learning a lot over these last couple of years about managing at the major league level. And so yeah, I think he's certainly shown some improvements, and I think you know is starting to prove a lot of the doubters wrong. And you know certainly that sort of stat I think will give a lot of Cardinals fans more hope about the future under him as a manager.
Who knew that today at the PGA it would be really a microcosm of about every one of us in this listening area when we go to the golf course. Rory cussing over a tee shot and some guy running late.
Oh, I saw that. I heard about that. I forgot who it was, but yeah,
Garrett
I heard about
Higo.
That. Okay. How about that? I mean, look, you know, for anybody, you could be Scotty Scheffler. The PGA Championship is bigger than most of the other tournaments on the PGA Tour. How in the world?
Run a little early.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, how in the world are you running late during a major tournament? Like, that blows my mind.
And was, from what, the way I understand it, was already at the course and was dilly-dallying and still ran late.
Yeah. He was on course. He was, I think, still, like, in the, like, on the putting green or something. He was not in the designated area that he was supposed to be in.
Who among us hadn't kind of had too much
honestly.
Of a Friday night? But one time, here's how bad I was and how little I was respected by the tournament organizers.
Oh, man.
And if it hadn't been for that, and I always thought late was DQ, over the top rope. I didn't know you had a designated area. Yeah. And I don't think it'd be very much fun to start plus two through zero holes.
No, thank you. No.
That wouldn't look good on the scoreboard marker. But big four ball, big Friday or night or both. I don't know which one it was. And real late. Only thing that saved me. Because I was late, but I was teeing off shotgun on 13B. So A was still in the middle of the fairway.
Oh, my gosh.
When we showed.
Holy cow.
How bad are you when they start you on B?
Yeah, no, that's not great. That is not great at all. Yeah, so I'm just seeing that he actually didn't have a bad day outside of the penalty.
What
for,
if he calls him?
Being late? I mean, it might. It really might. This was him.
But he won't be late again.
No, definitely not. This was what he said after carding a 1-under 69 in the first round. Quote, "I wouldn't have been late if I knew I was running late. Obviously, this is the first time it's happened. I wasn't sure quite what. I was just happy they allowed me to tee off. Firstly, you know what I mean? I was bummed when he said I got a two-shot penalty." That's a quote right there. I mean, that is...
That's the quote of 2026. That's quote of the year.
I wouldn't...
It sounds like he was still drunk.
I wouldn't have been late if I knew I was running late.
Said every late person ever.
Yes, that's going in my back pocket. I'm definitely... use that.
Right. You know I can't stand late.
No. And
boy,
I usually
there's
run
some,
late.
There's some that are always late and always in a hurry.
Yeah. No, you are right about that. That's some sort of quote there from Higo. We'll see. A lot of people will have their eyes on Higo to see what he does the rest of the week, and if he gets there a little early tomorrow for his round.
4-4 in the ninth, Cardinals.
All right.
Just plated one.
Love that. So maybe they could have a comeback win themselves over the Athletics. But let's get to another break, and when we return, it'll be time for Big Number of the Day.
Start your day with Sports 56 Mornings with Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy. Weekday mornings from 7 to 10, right here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Now, back to Sports Time on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour brought to you by Landers Ford in Collierville. Here once again are Brett Norsworthy and Bryant Dacus. And she says, I wish that I could be like the cool kids.
Big Daddy.
Hello, Big Brand.
It's a guy, he wants to be big, then he gets big, he doesn't want to be big anymore, then he gets small, but the suit's too big.
Big Daddy.
The big boy.
You're a big guy.
I think she's trying to pull a fast one on Big Daddy.
The big number of the day.
All right, Brett, my big number today is the number 63. Earlier today, CBS Sports ranked every single college football team at the FBS level after spring practice. Well, I saw it on social media, but a ranking of every single team, all now 138 teams in college football. They have Memphis as the number 63 team in the country. That puts them at third in the American. Navy and UTSA, the only two American teams ahead of them. Navy coming in at 53, UTSA at 59. And I think that would put them as the fourth or fifth team in the group of five in these rankings. I believe the only other, Boise State at 33 and UNLV at 46.
That's so, Boise privilege.
Yeah. That's pretty high for Boise at 33.
See, is that how people do it?
Yes.
On the privilege, that's Boise privilege.
I think you nailed that. So the top 10 of this: Ohio State, number one, Texas, two, Oregon, three, Notre Dame, four, Georgia, five, Indiana, six, Miami, seven, A&M, eight, Texas A&M, nine, Oklahoma, 10, Alabama, 11, Ole Miss, 12, LSU number 13. Oh, I should also say Memphis 63, Arkansas one spot ahead of them at number 62.
Huh. So what about Tennessee and Mississippi State from the area?
Tennessee 17, Mississippi State 57 for Mississippi State. Kentucky 58.
State ahead of Memphis and Arkansas.
Yes, that is okay. Correct. That
I haven't seen
correct.
That. So yeah. 138. Nothing.
138. That's right.
Almost as much is when an announcer is clearly doing a game in the afternoon. Boy, tonight it's some game going on. No, the sun's shining. It is anything but nighttime.
That's right.
You know, tonight's game. No, it's 2:30 in the afternoon.
Yes.
Next on the list, and you'll hear people this year, well, you know, 139 or 134, however many teams are in FBS. Uh-huh. No, let's get the number down. It's 138.
138. The new teams coming into college football this season: North Dakota State, 109. They're one spot behind Tulsa, one spot ahead of Kennesaw State. And then Sacramento State, they predict them to be one of the worst teams in the FBS next year. 136, but that is one spot ahead of American team Charlotte, who is 137 in the rankings.
Charlotte coming to Oxford week two.
That's right. So
Ole Miss, a new FBS team for me to see. I've never seen Charlotte in person.
Yeah, that'll be fun. So Ole Miss welcoming the 137th team in the country into town.
12-137.
Ooh, boy, what a game.
Throw the record books out. My big number is the number nine. Here are the next nine PGA Championship sites, and I wanted to get to it with Gary Williams, but I knew we were tight on time. These are the sites that are confirmed. They're contractually bound. They're going to happen. 2027 at PGA Frisco. That's going to be a popular place. Mm-hmm. They own the place. 2028 Olympic in San Francisco. 29 Baltusrol, New Jersey. 2030 back to Congressional in D.C. and Bethesda. 2031, Kiowa in South Carolina. That's the first one kind of back in the South. 2032, Southern Hills at Tulsa. 2033, Bethpage Black. 2034, back to Frisco and PGA. That's all that's contracted, because last night a debate, and the PGA is global. It's the whole world. Mm-hmm. Should they have a PGA at an international site outside of May?
Interesting.
like a September, October, Australia.
Interesting.
I'm going to worry about it in 2035.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of time to go back and forth on that. I don't know where I would stand on that one. But a lot of time to figure it out before they start thinking about different locations. But round one has been it's been interesting today. Scotty now up at the top in that big group of
surprise nobody.
Yeah, nobody. But Justin Thomas, I mean, he just almost took somebody's head off with that shot.
Look out.
And he was not happy about it. He slammed
today looked like us. It really sounded like us.
It really has, which kind of makes me feel good, you know? They're us. They're just like us. You know, they struggle just like we do. But some of these guys really, really struggling.
I left out a key part of what I was late for.
Okay.
We played in the same clothes we had on the night before.
That's great.
Not even that.
No.
Had on khakis and had to go to the pro shop and borrow scissors to make them into shorts.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Wow, that's something right there. That is, well, hey, sometimes you got to do what you got to do.
And, thank goodness for 13B.
Well, that's right. That is, sometimes you got to be thankful for
because it was
going to
be DQ.
No,
I wasn't going to get the two-shot penalty.
No. Yeah, it would have been get out of here for sure. But, no, it's been fun day one over at the PGA Championship. We need to get to a break and wrap up this second hour. Again, a shorter final hour for us as we're out early. Ole Miss baseball, they're in action against Alabama. So we'll get you over there for the pregame show at 5:30, first pitch at 6 o'clock. But let's get to a break. And when we return, we're talking Tigers. A lot to get to, both Tiger football and Tiger basketball. Greg Gaston, he joins us next.